Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And I am here this evening on the 27th of January, 2008. And as we speak, the president of these United Snakes is giving his final State of the Union address. Yes, this is the last State of the Union address by George W. Bush. And I didn't hear the beginning of it, but I suspect he told us the State of the Union is just honky-dory. You know how folksy he can be. I did hear a little bit of it on the way to the studio here, and it was full of the usual pablum and prescriptions, which is, you know, Democrats do it too. I was hoping to hear the section where he would talk about the FISA law that he wants to ram through Congress by February 1st, which is only 3 days away, because we're going to spend the second segment tonight talking about that. That is a touch-and-go debate, and our civil liberties are at stake in this, and it's amazing how politics play in this thing. What I mean is that if this were a Hillary Clinton presidency, and I don't think we'll get there with the looks of Obama's recent victory, or if it were back in the Bill Clinton years, the conservatives and the conservative talk show hosts would be out in force not allowing the president to have the authority to just wiretap who he says needs wiretapping. But because it's Bush in there, they're okay with it. It's very strange. Anyway, we'll get to that, but we never start with the really heavy stuff. Although I do have to say that I had to announce that we had the State of the Union address tonight. It's going on now, and because you're listening to me, I know you have as little interest in it as I do. Because almost nothing that that man proposes is going to get passed in his final year. He's as lame a lame duck as I've seen in my lifetime. And I've seen some lame ducks. You know, I was born on a farm, and those ducks, there were lame ducks all over the place. Lame geese, too. Lame jokes, even more so. Also, today was the day that Ted Kennedy endorsed Barack Obama. All of Camelot, Caroline Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, another one of the Kennedys, have endorsed Obama. Hillary did get some endorsements from a couple of Bobby Kennedy's children, I believe. Let's see. The president is, I'm just reviewing a little bit of the news here. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but in terms of what happened in the last week, things travel past us at a breakneck pace, and I wanted to make sure we covered some of them. So Bush and the House of Representatives have come up with a stimulus package, $150 billion stimulus package, that they think they'll push through. Of course, it's when we say stimulus package, what we really mean is deficit spending. Spend now, charge it to our children, and hope the economy gets better, and then it'll hopefully generate more taxes, and then our kids won't get stuck with the bill. But we kind of know they will get stuck with the bill. It's really amazing how we're willing. You know, individual families, most of us are not willing to charge. People may run their credit cards up, but they pay the piper. They leave money for their children. They don't leave their children in debt. But as a country, we're leaving our kids and our grandkids in deep, 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 deep. Do-do. So, why do we need a stimulus package, you ask? Well, the last week has been a real topsy-turvy ride. First of all, on Tuesday, well, no, actually, it was a week ago, on Monday, the stock markets around the globe plunged. An average of, I don't know, about 6%. London, Germany, Japan, China, Hong Kong, India, they all went down a minimum of 4%. Some of them went down over 7%. Unbelievable. The total value of the stock market went down that much in one day. So, traceable, of course, to the subprime interest problems here in the United States. And so the Federal Reserve came out the next day on Tuesday and cut interest rates. And this was not a regular Fed meeting. This was an emergency thing. And they said, let's let them know we're serious. And we cut interest rates 0.75 percentage point. You know, if you think back over the last, I don't know, 10, 20 years of Fed activity from Alan Greenspan through the new guy, Ben Bernanke, what we've had is sometimes when they think we need action in a hurry, like downward in action is usually what people say we need. No one hopes for increases in interest rates. Oh, they increase them when they think they have to fight inflation. But inflation hasn't been much of a problem in recent years. And people would say, well, it's because Greenspan kept his eye on the ball. But maybe, maybe not. That, all that monetary policy is a little too much for me and my audience, probably, meaning we don't fully understand it. I'm not an economist like a couple of my brothers. But they have talked in the past about, we hope it's a quarter, I'm sorry, we hope it's a half cut, a half point of cut, half a percentage point cut in the rate. And when it's only a quarter, the markets are flat or don't react and they don't like it because they were hoping for more. This time, the Fed cut three quarters of a point in an emergency session. And they're apparently going to cut another quarter of a point in their regularly scheduled meeting next week. That's the thinking. That's almost unheard of. You have to go back, I don't know if it's 30 years, 50 years for action like this, apparently. So pretty drastic action. And it hasn't really stopped the sell-off. The stock market still hasn't recovered, and we're in some pretty deep doo-doo. And as we talked about last week, what's interesting when you talk about $150 billion stimulus package, or apparently senators want to add to that, so maybe we end up over $200 billion, we are still in the midst of the Bush tax cuts, which were supposed to get the economy moving again and keep it moving and actually generate more revenue than they gave away. That was one I talked in detail, so I'll just review it briefly here. Talked in detail last week about it. Actually, that was 2 weeks ago because we didn't have a show on the holiday. The studios are locked up on holidays, which is why we didn't have a show on Martin Luther King, the celebration of Martin Luther King Day. But I did 2 weeks ago review this in some detail, and what I said was, it's interesting that the Bush stimulus package back then, it started as, well, we've got extra money. We don't want to keep extra money. It's your money. You paid for it, as the president so famously said. So he wanted to refund or give away $1.9 trillion, which was anticipated to be a surplus. Well, son of a gun if it ended up not being a surplus. But we're giving it away. And it was backloaded. It wasn't front-loaded. So that when the recession came right about the time, it actually didn't start till Bush got in office, but he kept downplaying the economy because he didn't want to get blamed for the recession. So he badmouthed the economy, which no president's supposed to do. And when it came, the stimulus package didn't really, he started talking about it as a stimulus package. Now we need it not to refund the surplus, but to make sure the economy's okay and to help it grow. But of course, they backloaded it. So the majority of the tax cuts are coming between 2005 and 2011. In fact, I think at least half of them are coming between 2007 and 2011. So we're in the middle of this huge tax cut of 1.9, actually ended up with a total of $2.3 trillion, I believe, in tax cuts. With the tax cuts he affected the first 3 years of his administration. And they're going to add $150 billion to this and hope to prime the pump. Good luck. Anyway, enough on the economy. Let's move on to the next big news. And this is local, meaning D.C. area. But a big surprise last week, the Dulles Rail Project, that is the attempt to take a metro line from where it runs today on the Orange Line in Fairfax County through Tyson's Corner and out to Dulles Airport, is apparently all but dead, according to the Washington Post and other reports. So it turns out that there's a metro line, as people in this area know, that takes you out almost to George Mason University, my university, in Fairfax. You can catch a bus from there over to campus. But we've had this major airport an hour away from D.C., almost an hour, about an hour, for over 30 years. And the plan was always to hook it up by rail. But we figured, well, it's down the road. Well, that's been in the works now for many years, this extension. In fact, the basic principle of it has been on the drawing board since 64 when the master plan for the airport was in place. But let's just say 1990, when the Virginia Transportation Board set up this thing about the Dulles Corridor, right, that the expressway that runs from Dulles Airport towards the Tyson's Corner, and then you can get into the city. At least since 1990, they've been planning this rail line. So it turns out that what happened this week is the federal government, in the form of the federal transit authorities, there's a couple of federal agencies that are in on this, the Federal Transit Administration and the U.S. Transportation Department. And they announced at a meeting that, you know, you're not making fast enough progress on a few things and the costs are scaring us more. So you should assume that unless you make these additional changes, major changes, which local authorities say are out of the question and sprung on them, you're not going to get the money that we were going to give you. So apparently the federal government was going to pay 20% of the project. That's only about $900 million. Apparently it's almost $4.5 billion construction project. And if you remember, if you live locally, you remember that going back just a few months, the big issue was, can they still put the area, the metro that goes through Tyson's Corner, which is a well-developed industrial park, can they put that underground so that people can walk through the area and you develop this, commuter and pedestrian area? Or are you going to put it up on stilts, which will kind of cut through the center of it and not be as pretty or as conducive to business and people? Well, the local authorities gave up on the underground version because it cost too much and it put us too far behind schedule. But now the federal government people are saying, no, you got other problems you need to address. But the state and local officials are crying foul and saying, no, you've been telling us this and that all along. We've addressed all these issues. So we'll see what happens, but apparently we're going to go back to the drawing board on some of this. Contracts were supposed to start on February 1st, or else they may have to be renegotiated. So we'll have to see where that plays out. Anyway, second item I want to talk about here in this little bit of a segment is that we are coming up on the Super Bowl on Sunday. So make sure you get your TiVo capability going. You get your TiVo out, because some of the finest advertisements of the year appear every year on the Super Bowl. And in anticipation of that, today's sports section of the Washington Post listed what the sports writers, and what the heck do they know about advertising? I think it's the sports writers, voted was the five best advertising campaigns in the history of the Super Bowl, or ads plus ad campaigns, whichever you want to call it. Now, I have to tell you already, I disagree with this list, a couple on this list, but we'll walk through them. First, the Budweiser frogs, right? Budweiser. And when the frogs were croaking, you didn't know at first it was a Bud ad, and then they back out and they can see the Bud ad. The reason they put them number one, they say, is that not only did the frogs make their debut, but they were followed up by other ads, including the one with the two lizards, Louie and Frankie. So the argument was that it belongs there because it spawned a whole series, which most of these ads were individual ads. Now, they claimed also that the other reason you give it to Bud is Bud had to get at least one. It's been the number one Super Bowl advertiser over the years, and the Clydesdale playing football spots and the Bud Bowl were strong contenders for this list. Well, hold it right there. The idea that the Bud Bowl would be a strong contender for the list. Do you remember the Bud Bowl ads? Those were the most boring ads in the history of the Super Bowl. And they kept it up year after year and did this whole series. I thought they were going to do something clever with it. They had beer bottles clinking together and trying to run plays, and that's all there was to it. And they came up with an imaginary score, and some people won and some people didn't, and it was so stupid. Anyway, second ad, Michael Jordan and Larry Bird in the McDonald's ad. They were playing horse for a Big Mac and French fries, I think. And they kept getting more and more ridiculous till they moved outside of the gymnasium and shot ridiculously long shots from half a mile away or something. A pretty good ad, I have to admit. Number three, Mean Joe Green, the Coca-Cola ad, where the kid gives Mean Joe a Coke after a tough game, and the Mean Joe tosses the kid his jersey. Thanks, Mean Joe, it ends. Now, that was introduced during the season, but it did play during the Super Bowl, and Mean Joe Green was in the Super Bowl that year, and he and his Steelers won that Super Bowl, Super Bowl 14, in 1980. And so I have to say that is one of the two greatest Super Bowl ads of all time, although it didn't make its debut at the Super Bowl. The one that they put forth, I have to say, is the greatest Super Bowl ad of all time, all right? And it is the Macintosh Apple's 1984 ad, okay? Apparently, there wasn't as much enthusiasm for among the staff that voted on this in the at the Washington Post. But they argue that it's because there was no humor in it, and all the good ads seem to have humor. Hey, grow up. This was an amazing ad. The year was 1984. Apple was the upstart. IBM was the established player, and they were arguing over computer standards. Apple was easier to use. IBM had the entree into the corporations. And they had this very attractive woman in shorts and a tight T-shirt come in with a hammer and explode the screen, destroy the screen of Big Brother, and all the people who were using IBM were sitting there, and it was the announcement of the Macintosh product, which was long awaited. It was a perfect moment of television. I remember seeing it live, and I've never seen an ad like it. Of course, a lot of the people that voted on this may not have experienced that ad live the first time. But quite an amazing moment in its context. And, you know, we're still in the same position with Apple and not so much IBM, but the PC. Apple only has 10% of the market, but they make the sleekest, coolest, most interesting products that run better and work with less trouble than the PC and the Microsoft software that has come after IBM. So I got to tell you, I like that one. And then finally, they put Career Builders Office Monkeys on there. And basically, if you got monkeys in your ad, it's comedy gold is the argument. All right. I don't care that much about that one. I'm surprised they didn't vote GoDaddy ads in, but I guess those are too recent. And let's see. What else do we want to say about this? Oh, let's see. There is a lawsuit pending about autopsies and the corpses of the dead. Apparently, this couple in Ohio, their son died, and apparently had a seizure or a stroke and drove off the road and was killed, but he was only 30 years old. And so the coroner did an autopsy, and they removed the guy's brain and wanted to analyze it. Well, it takes a couple of weeks to put it in solution before you can take a piece of it and do the right test. So they gave the body back to the family, but they kept the brain and didn't tell them. Well, this goes on all the time, apparently, and most people don't know it. And, of course, depending on your religion, Catholic being one of them, you're supposed to bury the whole body. Every part of the body is sacred and should be given a proper burial. So a lot of people have sued and said, you can't be doing this. Well, the problem is then, if they win, and then some jurisdictions have already paid out money for this, and there's a big class action lawsuit against all the other counties in Ohio except the one in Cincinnati that's paid off. The problem is people are going to authorities are going to say, okay, we're going to give you the whole body back, but we need 2 weeks, 3 weeks to do an autopsy on your deceased loved one. Hold off on the funeral for 3 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It's a bit messy. But right now, people are not getting the whole body back, but not realizing it, apparently. And let's see. Let's end with a little bit on science here in this half. Two items that I want to mention this week. The first is that there is an asteroid that's going to miss Earth tonight. They call it a near miss, or maybe this isn't quite a near miss. I think it is. It's coming within 334,000 miles of Earth. That's about 1.5 times the distance from here to the moon. So it's a long ways away, But in astronomical terms, that is, in the terms of astronomy and the universe, it's pretty close. When you consider that a light year is 5.2 trillion miles, 334,000 miles is pretty darn close. And what's interesting is scientists not only know that that's coming and is going to miss us tonight by that distance, and they know the exact distance it's going to miss us by, they also know that no other object this size, by the way, this was about the width of 3 football fields. So that's pretty big. It could do damage, serious damage if it hit the Earth. And not just to a small area. It's amazing how something that big hitting the Earth throws things off kilter. But it turns out that it will be 2027, 20 years more before an object this size or larger passes this close to the Earth. Now stop and think about that. Isn't it amazing that we know, scientists know, that there's no other object in the skies headed our way in the next 20 years that'll be closer. They are tracking hundreds of thousands of asteroids and objects. They're only bothered with the large ones that could do damage. And they know exactly where they are and how close they'll pass. And we have precise measurements out there. Now, this is not like the movie. That wasn't Space Cowboys, was it? No, it was that other one with Bruce Willis where they send this team of mining experts or something up to an asteroid to put a nuclear bomb on it and blow it up so it shatters into pieces and doesn't hit the Earth. That's fiction. We do not have the ability to alter the trajectory of one of these things yet. But we know a lot about them. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that science has this kind of command of detail and can tell us this stuff. It's that much of an authority on things that boggle the mind. And yet, people pick and choose their science, the science they'll care to believe and the science they won't, almost like it was, you know, like astrology or something. Well, I don't believe that theory. You know, I don't believe I don't believe in global warming. I don't care if 99% of the scientists that have a expertise in this field say it's real. I don't believe in evolution. Or whatever people say. It's just amazing how people think that science is a cafeteria when we spend so much money and have so much expertise in every field of endeavor. Now, we still have a lot to learn, but they got a handle on a lot of this stuff. But we have people that just dismiss it and say, I choose not to believe that. I don't think it's right. Okay. Well, with that, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the Protect America Act, because the Protect America Act is the revision of the FISA law from last fall that is up for renewal. And they only put it in place for 6 months, and Bush and Cheney are chomping at the bit for more power.